Namo Buddhassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ Dhammaṃ Sanghaṃ Namassāmi. So there's a cold going around the monastery, and I'm participating in it, so that my head is kind of thick, and we'll see what comes out, but hopefully it's somewhat coherent. While I was sitting in meditation this evening, one of the themes that came up in my mind were around the kind of one of the phrases that depicts the kind of the essence of the practice in terms of a goal or a aspect of the goal, that sense of seeing things as they truly are. And how important and essential that is. You know, even just sitting with a cold, sitting with aches and pains, sitting with kind of itchy, scratchy throat, and just seeing things in there, seeing and as it truly is. Just that seeing it as it truly is. That's what the feeling is. Feeling of discomfort. Feeling of the body being maybe kind of flushed, or head being thick, and that's the way it is. what we do with that in the mind is something else, because usually there's this kind of disconnect or juxtaposition of things as they truly are and things as how I want them to be or how they should be. And there's this constant conflict going on, whether it's internal or external, our sort of our internal world of how we relate to ourselves or how we relate to the world around us. And there's the way things are. So I've got a cold, I've got aches and pains, I've got a stuffy head, and the way things should be. I should be healthy and comfortable and at ease. And the two don't work together. They don't communicate at all, actually. And they actually never have, and they never will. So that the whole point of our practice is to be able to recognize how our desires, preferences, attachments, biases, keep pulling us in the direction of how things should be and away from how things are. So to be willing to investigate that, to rather than being constantly frustrated or living in hope, expectation of things as we would like them to be, how they should be, really paying attention to how things are. You know, what is the feeling in the body right now? What is the feeling in the mind right now? What are the circumstances in my life that I'm experiencing? What are the causes and conditions for them to be that way? Because that's, you know, being able to look at things as they truly are. Because that, you know, what circumstances in our life are dependent on how the various causal factors, karmic conditioning, whether it's our own or others, it's not, they have, say, reasons and logical sequences why things are manifesting, why they are the way they are. Now that we spend our life maybe hoping for harmony and peace, and then the way things are is maybe there's kind of disharmony or sense of agitation or things that are decidedly not peaceful. Start to be able to recognize, yeah, this is the way it is. Rather than kind of dwelling in the sense that, well, it should be peaceful. People should be harmonious. The world should be peaceful. So I think of these last week, the on a world scale, there's all these images coming out of Burma of the people protesting, monks leading protests, being beaten, being imprisoned, and yeah, the world shouldn't be this way. It's a Buddhist culture. Don't they get it? And but it's not the way it is. And there's a whole long backlog of causes and conditions of why it is that way, and the recognizing, yeah, this is the way things are. It doesn't mean we don't do anything or nobody can do anything or that it's absolutely fixed and rigid. It's going to be that way forever. But it's extraordinarily painful to look at the world around one or one's own life, personal life, and say, you know, I should be peaceful. The world should be peaceful. Everything should be in harmony. And when it's not, then being upset, frustrated, agitated because of that. And sort of one needs to be able to look at, yeah, this is the way things are, and why is it like that? And what are the ways to foster what we do cherish or hold dear? It's really stepping back and looking at the causal condition for things, looking at the an overall broad perspective, so that it's not a either a personal affront or a personal assessment or judgment of one's, just because one experiences something that is not peaceful, then one is somehow diminished or flawed. So that looking at the difference between the way things are and how we think it should be. We do that with things like, you know, I should be contented. And the way things are is there's desires, attachments, and there's draws and pulls, attractions. And in terms of Dhamma practice, if we don't really, if we're not really willing to recognize those desires and pulls and attachments, then we'll never really have the opportunity to be free from them. If we work from the realm of, it just shouldn't be this way, I don't want it to be like that, I don't want myself to be like this, that's coming from a place of idealism and not from a place of reality. Now that the Buddha was an immense pragmatist. He was just very, very practical. Recognizing, yeah, the human condition is bound by, what's the stock phrase, bound by ignorance and obstructed by craving, which is, that sums up the human condition really well. And but that, by saying that, the Buddha is not saying it's hopeless. He's saying we've got to really recognize what the problem is, what the difficulty is, what the obstruction is, in order to be able to work with it skillfully, to be able to approach the problem with really skillful means. And certainly the basis of those skillful means is seeing things as they truly are and being willing to look at that. So that difference between the how things are of kind of desire, attraction, and how things should be of contentment. It doesn't mean that we can't work towards contentment, but it's the ability to be very patient in the face of desire, in the light of desire, that allows the mind to come to contentment, rather than kind of annihilating, destroying desire from an idealistic perspective, just through the wave of the wand of wisdom, which, you know, isn't grounded in reality and truth, but that ability to see through desire and being very patient with it, being Not patient in terms of just putting up with blindly and dumbly, but being very patient to really see that desire really doesn't ever really get satisfied. It doesn't ever really get what it wants anyway. So by being very patient and still, I think patience is a good, maybe to look at and say that the ability to be present with what one's experiencing, so that one's very present with desire, seeing it clearly, this is suffering, or this is really unsatisfactory. And by seeing that, then the impulse towards it, one's able to drop it. And it's like, and it isn't dropped out of rejection, aversion. It's dropped out of a clear seeing. So that being willing to set those two things that seem to be at odds with each other, that seeing things as they truly are, and seeing things as they should be, allowing that to be able to recognize that, that tendency to be drawn to the idealistic position of how things should be, and to come back to the more practical and patient approach of seeing, this is the way things are. Now, what's its implication? What's the result? How does that affect me? How does that affect the world and people around me? So that as we're able to establish ourselves in that seeing clearly the way things are, then we're actually much more able to really be established in those qualities of peace and contentment that we do aspire to, rather than just blindly trying to coerce ourselves into the box of our idealism. You know, we think of the way things should be, we should be compassionate and kind. We should be full of loving kindness for all living creatures. The Buddha teaches in one of his discourses of somebody who, even if robbers were to sort of saw with a two-handled saw, cut one's limbs off, from limb to limb, sort of, if one had a thought of ill will arise because of that, then one wouldn't be practicing according to the Buddha's teachings. That's pretty ideal. And, we measure up ourselves and, nobody's sort of attacking us with saws and taking our limbs off. It's just somebody gets up your nose because of some irritating tendency, and one, gets caught up in ill will, aversion, irritation. Wow, I'm never going to be able to practice these teachings. That's hopeless. I'm hopeless. But coming back, seeing the way things are. There is irritation, there is aversion, there is ill will. Now how to allow that irritation and ill will to teach us, to allow us to recognize the, say, just the futility of being drawn into ill will and aversion. So that patience with the way things are and the ability to establish mindfulness and circumspection in that present moment. And start seeing, well, it's just the mood that comes up. It isn't the whole picture. It isn't what is defining our total relationship with the world around us and other people or ourselves. It's just a mood. And one recognizes that it's, as we invest in it, then it is painful. And it doesn't actually accomplish anything. And on a certain level, even if we're, you know, if somebody is our kind of our enemy or somebody that we're at loggerheads with, and they really are wishing for our kind of downfall and suffering. And then if we're able to oblige them by creating suffering for ourselves, by being miserable and averse, then if they knew our mental state, they would be able to delight in that. And it's, why would we do that? I mean, we're just undermining ourselves. So that to the degree that we're able to be patient, equanimous, compassionate, then then we're providing a refuge for ourselves, and then we're also giving ourselves the opportunity to have a victory over our own unskillfulness and the unskillfulness of anybody else. So, also that tendency to, when we get swept up in aversion, ill will, irritation, it usually tends to be there's this edge of righteous indignation that goes along with it, that we're right, and then we're also that some sort of punishment should be meted out by us towards others so that they can receive the just fruits of their unskillfulness. Of course, that sort of flies in the face of the law of karma, that phrase or part of the teachings that we're encouraged to recite and reflect on a regular basis, on a daily basis. I'm the owner of my karma, heir to my karma, born of my karma, related to my karma, abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. By the law of karma, whoever engages in what is unskillful will receive the fruits of that. Whoever engages in what is skillful will receive the fruits of that, just by the nature of that universal law. So that if somebody else has engaged in what is unskillful, we don't have to be involved in it at all. We don't, in the sense that we can trust that those actions will provide their own fruit. And And then also the reality is, to whatever extent we respond to things unskillfully with our aversion, ill will, irritation, then by the law of karma, that's going to come back to us. We own that. So we're just creating the causes for our own distress and discomfort. The Buddha compares it to somebody who sort of throws dust into the wind, and the dust is going to blow back in their face, or somebody who sort of spits up into the sky and it's just going to fall back on their face. So those are powerful images to remind ourselves that we pay attention to the way things are, and a intrinsic part of the way things are, say, is the law of karma. That's the way things are. When we put unskillfulness into the system, then the system sort of spits it back at us at some time, some point, some time or another. That is a motivation to encourage ourselves in establishing of loving kindness and compassion, because those are the things that those are the causes for our own well-being, as well as the well-being of others. And so it's not through the kind of imposing an ideal on ourselves that I should be more kind, I should be more compassionate, I should be more loving. When one sees the way things truly are, one has that very deep, kind of almost, on a gut level, recognition. That's how what would be truly beneficial. So then it's a very natural relinquishment of those tendencies to anger or ill will, and a drawing towards that which is associated with loving kindness or compassion, just because it's by the nature of how things truly are, that's what feels better. That's what feels good. So these kind of juxtapositions of how things truly are and how we think things should be, it's a really fruitful area to be investigating, watching, paying attention to, so that we're not just blindly being pulled into, either habit or kind of idealistic, imposition of what we think we should be doing, how the world should be. And drawing back to those qualities of mindfulness, reflection, discernment, that allow us to see, this is the way things truly are. And the Buddha's injunction and encouragement towards that is really the source of protection, refuge, peace. It's actually quite natural, but we need, that's why we need training, that's why we need practice. And sometimes something that is very kind of natural, we need to train ourselves in. It doesn't mean we just do it in an ordinary way. It's really have to see the benefit in it. It's really natural for human beings to, say for their bodies to rely on healthy food. But the experience of looking around the world and seeing how, or ourselves, and see how easy it is just to get into unskillful eating habits, things that are just not really either necessary or beneficial. So it does need some training, it does need some practice to encourage ourselves to really rely on just that truth of the way things are, or seeing things as they truly are. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.
Andamayantam Pitaya Sarupa Ramdana Sehe